Remember, you can stay up to date on the latest news with the Irish Independent WhatsApp channel.
This week on Crime World.
There was a Republican police from 1920. I mean, the IRA was effectively trying to run an underground government. And actually, there was a crime wave. 1919, 1920, there's a wave of bank robberies, post office robberies, robberies of individuals, robberies of pubs in Dublin and in rural areas as well. So the IRA tried to actually clamp down on that. They, on occasion, solving bank robberies and giving the money back to the banks. Now,
I'm Nicola Tallant, and you can listen to my podcast, Crime World, wherever you get your podcasts.
They were O'Driscoll, Forgan, extra man is Fitzgerald. Oh, Fitzgerald is cutting back inside! Leinster have another! Darcy O'Driscoll through the legs. Rob Carney out to Fitzgerald again. Step and score. Number two for him.
Hello and welcome to the Left Wing Independent.ie's rugby podcast. I'm Will Slattery, delighted to be joined, as always, by Luke Fitzgerald. Luke, hello.
Will, how are things?
Doing well. Another Six Nations weekend in the books. I enjoyed the tweet from the official Six Nations account of legendary father and son pairings in five and Six Nations history. You and your dad made the cut.
They did indeed, yeah. I tell you, a lot of my friends were... Peter Stringer tagged in on the end of it, and he had, in fairness, an absolute cracker of a tweet underneath regarding my weight. It was kind of fat shaming me, which is I didn't think that kind of stuff went on nowadays, but very funny.
We can make certain exceptions, I think.
Yeah, no, but look, I suppose to put it in context, I put out the tweet that my father was ashamed of me, that I turned out to be a back three player, him having been a tight head. So Peter has said that, well, I think he must have been proud of my efforts to become a prop subsequent to my retirement. So nice of him to say. It's always nice to touch base with strings. In fairness, very funny. But yeah, no, it's nice. It's a nice little thing to have actually in the house. It's one of my favorite things in my parents' house is my first cap jersey and his first cap jersey, not really for any other reason than, well, it's obviously a nice achievement, I suppose, but the difference in the jerseys is like, it's incredible. So like, yeah, they're basically wearing a jumper. And I remember him saying to me that when he kind of started off, like, they had no idea about strength and conditioning. Like, we always wondered why, you know, and look, there certainly is probably a difference in fitness levels, say with New Zealand, for example. They always used to mill us in the last 20 minutes, but they used to be a lot of water. They used to think it gave you cramps. So they'd no water before, like at halftime, they were like on orange peels and whatever tea or whatever it was. So you can, it's no wonder they were absolutely useless in the last 20 minutes.
I was going to say, I don't think Ireland beat Scotland once in the entire 90s. And now I'm understanding why when I hear some of the...
it's crazy, isn't it?
I was trying to think, I couldn't think of any other kind of father-son pairing where there's like a front row and a back three. Like all the other guys were like similar positions, similar kind of almost players in a way. And then it's like Des Fitzgerald, front row, Luke Fitzgerald, back three.
Yeah, I know. Maybe my try record is the only similarity. I suppose my mum was a good athlete to see. She was a very good swimmer and she played netball for Ireland as well. So maybe I got a few of her genes in there somewhere.
When are we going to get a father-son podcast to discuss the differences between the 90s and the noughties in terms of international rugby?
Well, he's retired now, so maybe he has a bit of time. Look, I'm always reluctant, and he's always been reluctant to get involved in things like that, to be honest. You know yourself, they're just kind of weird ones. Like, we'd be very close, but I don't know, I'd feel nearly uncomfortable doing that, to be honest. And subjecting him to you, Will... grilling him, you know, he's no, I'm sure. Look, maybe we'll revisit if we're really stuck.
the break glass in case of emergency podcast.
If you'll know things are bad if he's on, put it that way.
Well, in the meantime, we have a great guest this week, one of our regulars, Tracy Keane. How are things?
Hey, lads, enjoying that little trip down memory lane for Luke there. I'm all on board, by the way, for that podcast. I think it's a great idea.
Yeah, I know. I've been floating it every so often over the years. He hasn't bit just yet, so hopefully, you know, in time he might agree to it.
I'm willing to give up one of my slots for Des Fitzgerald.
Oh, we couldn't do that.
One of your weekly slots at this stage.
Yeah, Keane, especially like just full disclosure for the listener to my Keane, braving the pain barrier. He had a big trip to the dentist earlier. He warned me that he might be under the influence of anesthetic, pain-killing drugs. So anything could come out during this podcast, Keane. Is that fair to say?
You couldn't have even said that. Like anything odd then would have just been purely attributed to that. So yeah, that was, I would have just let him burn.
it was looking dodgy, I'm not gonna lie, like as I was sitting there for 45 minutes in the chair. Like, it's such a sad indictment on the way of life at the moment that a trip to the dentist for 45 minutes was seen as a day out for me today. Like, it's fairly pathetic. Like,
you had your hang sandwiches and your flask of tea for your trip to the dentist.
Absolutely pathetic. Like, but yeah, here now, braving it. I'm just waiting for the anesthetic to wear off, so that could be interesting once it does.
Yeah, and I've moved from my regular podcast seat at home, so I'm a little bit thrown off myself today. So if I say anything unusually off the cuff, that's why I've changed my seat. Well, guys, well, I suppose we've talked obviously naturally about Ireland and the attack and all that for the last couple of weeks. So we will start there today, but we will try to move on to Wales and England and some of the other storylines, because I know we probably haven't gone into that quite as much over the last couple of weeks, Keane. But I suppose going into that Italy game, top of the checklist, we wanted to see maybe a few more offloads, a more incisive attacking shape, and the defence, a resolute defensive performance. You know, on those fronts, how did the team fare overall, you think?
Yeah, like it was pretty good, obviously. I mean, credit where credit's due, they did deliver in that regard. But it's, even when I've been writing about it since the game on Saturday, like everything is caveated by the fact that Italy were atrocious. And I have to say, I was saying in the build-up to the game as well, I know they've made some slight improvements in attack, but that counts for very, very little when you're defensively hopeless, and they were defensively hopeless. It was a perfect game for Ireland. I described it as a bit of a therapy session. They had the freedom to go out and throw those offloads, to be a bit more incisive in what they were doing, and there is a freedom, and I think they'll realise that there was a freedom in doing that against Italy. It was interesting, kind of after the game, just like Sexton and Farrell were a bit kind of chippy about it, when everyone was kind of not dismissing it, but kind of already looking towards Scotland, because ultimately that's Scotland and England are much, much bigger tests. But what I would say is, yeah, they did what we had kind of hoped they would do. The attack looked much better, but like my issue is that if we had seen more signs of that over the last few weeks and then they delivered this performance, I think, we'd feel a lot better about things. But the fact that we haven't really seen a whole pile of it and then all of a sudden it comes out is encouraging on one hand, but it's all well and good doing it against Italy. I thought there was lots of positives. I mean, I think, regardless of the opposition, Johnny Sexton just makes a huge, huge difference to Ireland's attacking shape. Again, I know Italy were poor, but he just pulls the strings so, so well. I'm sure we'll get on to talking about his contract and stuff like that. I thought the team as a whole looked far more dynamic. I thought the back row worked really, really well. The front row, similarly enough. And I guess what you'd hope is that it's, from a selection point of view, that it's not kind of disregarded that, it was only Italy. Like, you'd like to see these guys be rewarded, because I thought Ireland...
Which way do you want it? Like you were saying earlier, that was a good, Italy are terrible and we can't really do it. Now you're saying, but we want to, take the good performances from this. Like, I'm sure Rhys Ruddock would have loved to run out against Italy rather than playing against the French back row.
100%, but I'm kind of maybe thinking of someone like Ronan Keller or Will Connors. Yeah. Like Ronan Keller in particular, like I've been writing about it earlier this week. Like, I just think he's the future at hooker. He just offers you so, so much around the pitch. And no disrespect to Rob Herring, but he just doesn't offer anything around the pitch, and he is the best thrower in the squad. But Kelleher, I think he nailed all but one of his line-out throws, so like that was a huge positive. The set piece was very good again. So look, there were positives, but I'm reluctant to kind of go too overboard at the same time.
Yeah, Luke, because it was like interesting afterwards, kind of Andy Farrell and Johnny Sexton were pretty bullish on the performance and what it meant for the direction of the team. And I think Andy Farrell even said, I think that's, is that a disrespectful question when someone said, well, here, it's just Italy, a terrible Italy team. You know, how much do you take from last weekend, realistically?
I think it's really difficult. I was surprised how bullish they were after the game. Look, you do have to respect the opposition. So, of course, they're not going to be disrespectful, but at the same time, I did think it was a bit weird that they were kind of like, well, yeah, it, like it looked like there was they had completely changed their attack and that they thought everything was fixed. Like the stats are just awful for Italy. Like 2 yellow cards over the period, 18 penalties conceded, you know, 25 missed tackles. I don't know. Like it was only, I said it last week, there's only downside with Italy. You just need to get through the thing and you need to score a few tries. Did they do what we asked? Yeah, like there was some definitely some attacking fluency. I agree with everything Keane said, pretty much actually. I thought, Johnny Sexton, it's still very, very prevalent, the difference that he makes. He's an excellent rugby player. Like you saw the difference, particularly in his handling ability. Like his hand, even for the Keith Earls try at the end, the quick hands. Like, I saw Dricko there during the week saying that he was, you know, we might have retired him early. I don't think anyone has said that. I think the big concern has always been that we just don't see, like you have, like we have to look at the numbers in front of us. Like he mentioned something about finishing games. I have not looked into that stat, but I know that, you know, while he hasn't got injured all the time, they do pull him off early, you know, and I think maybe that is to develop another player, but like, he's coming to an age where we have to start asking the question, like, well, who's next? Like, who's going to bring this team forward for the next 10 years? Of course, we've had some positive news of Joey Carberry being back, but it's definitely a concern that there's still such a big gulf there. In terms of what we asked them in the current position, I'll just come back to that. There was lots of positives. Like, I mean, Kelleher, like, they just can't have Herring there. Like, I just don't see, there's such a big difference between the two around the pitch. Like, and he needs opportunities to make mistakes in test matches on his throwing. That's the part of his game that needs to be improved. I thought that was really good, by the way. The stats, you know, were good in the lineout, very strong again. And it looks like Paul O'Connell has certainly made a difference there. And that'll be big for this team going forward. But Ronan Keller, like, that was great to see that. And he was really, really good. The other two new guys were really good. I thought Baird, very positive. Again, he might, like, you know, that position that Tadhg Byrne finds himself is where I probably see the issue being for Baird. But I think long-term, I think six looks like a really good place for him. He's a brilliant athlete. He's great in the air. He offers a huge amount around the pitch. I think that's the future for him, the Tadhg Byrne kind of role there. I thought Tadhg Byrne was brilliant at six. Great to see him, have such a good game and go so well there. He was excellent. And Casey was brilliant. Casey was superb, I thought. Like, I really enjoyed watching him work. It was great to hear such glowing talk about him after the game as well. So there were positives. There absolutely were positives. But to be so bullish after the game, I don't buy it. I'm not going to lie, I don't buy it. That's one that you just tick off the list and say, we got our tries, bit of attacking fluency, all positive. Weather was good. You know, I would probably have liked to have seen them not concede a try, but everything else I thought was pretty good. I actually thought the defense was very good. Other than that, it was good. So that was something that I definitely did want to see. And can they bring that now to a team that'll really test them over the period and challenge them in the game and not give them so much front foot ball? That's what we want to see. We want to see some improvement in that area as well. So that was my kind of view on things, Will. Lots of positives, but again, as I said, it's really a downside only fixture. So just get through the thing and let's see what they've got against Scotland.
Yeah, Keenan, just one last word, like without belaboring the point, this on the post-match press conference and the lads' reaction, because you would have been there, and for listeners and myself who wouldn't have kind of just only read about it or heard about it from yourself or Rod, like what was their kind of demeanor and the interaction like?
Yeah, like it was strange. I definitely got a sense that, you know, they thought that like people should have been giving them more credit for what they did, but obviously that's not really our job either. Like we can only judge, you know, things on its merits. To be fair, the kind of quote that you referred to about Andy Farrell kind of saying, was it disrespectful? That was a fairly innocent question. It was more kind of, you know, okay, you know, you beat Italy handily enough. Italy are pretty poor. You know, let's look towards Scotland. And Farrell really wanted to labour on the point, well, we were very good today against Italy, and he got a bit chippy about it. But look, I mean, I suppose that's their siege mentality, if that's what they want to call it. And look, if they're able to use it to their advantage going into the last two games, then all well and good. But, you know, even the way they lost their way, really, not lost their way, sorry, that's harsh. They kept took their foot off the pedal, I thought, in the second half.
The second half was quite a... They did kind of the third quarter in the last three matches in the Six Nations. Mm. They've kind of struggled a bit after the break. And I thought, given their dominance, especially in the wider challenges and in attack with the the back line, they were tearing them to shreds. They kind of went away from that in the second half, I thought.
100%. And I remember I was tweeting about it during the game. Like, if you were, like, Luke can probably comment on this, if you were an outside back in that game in the second half, you would have been tearing your hair out, because, like, I found it very frustrating. You're dead right to highlight it, Will. I totally agree that they had got so much joy out of the kind of the wide game and the offloads in the first half. And then in the second half, they just said, okay, let's just smash them up front and try and run over them. Whereas I felt like that was kind of going back into the old ways, which we don't. We've seen that that approach is not going to work against the bigger teams, your France's, your England's, your South Africa's. So I was a bit disappointed that, I mean, they'll point to the fact that they got the job done. They scored a couple of tries. But I was a bit disappointed we didn't see more from the backs. Obviously, the Keith Earls try in injury time. And James Lowe's try was disallowed. But yeah, like, I just thought there was plenty more tries on offer there, and maybe they were just satisfied with what they had. But yeah, like, that was the gist of in terms of what it was like in the press conference afterwards. But obviously I'm biased, but I thought the coverage was pretty fair across the board, really, from everyone. That great performance, well done. But I mean, no one is buying into the fact that Italy are absolutely atrocious. And there's the narrative going around about Italy, like, that, you know, I think Franco Smith said that in 5 or 6 years that they'll be able to compete. Like, if you look at the records of Zebre and Treviso, Benetton, who've fallen off a cliff, they haven't won a game in the Pro 14 this season. And they were kind of the great big hope. Like, these players are getting hammered every week. Like, every week they're turning up and getting hammered. So
it's
like,
30 games in a row. I think it's 30 games in a row they've lost.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like,
yeah, it's crazy. Like, and I don't know what the solution is in terms of going forward for the Six Nations, but people aren't going to be going into, you know, overdrive hype that Ireland are after beating a shockingly bad team. So I think they'll have taken a lot out of it, the players. But if we can see some of the stuff that they did against Italy when they play Scotland next week, then it'll definitely have been a worthwhile trip.
Yeah, and it looks like they're going to bring in maybe some of the guys who performed well against Italy, like, for that Scotland game. One guy I'd be interested, Luke, to get your opinion on is Craig Casey, who has been released back to play for Munster this weekend. Conor Murray's been kept in the Ireland squad, which would maybe lead you to believe he'll go with Murray and Gibson Park in some order, and maybe Casey won't be involved against Scotland. But I was just looking at some of the numbers, and I think it's an interesting parallel to bring up. So there's 10 years between Casey and Conor Murray. They're born a day apart in April, but 10 years. This time 10 years ago, Conor Murray was brought into the Munster team, you know, over Tomás O'Leary, over Peter Stringer, two established guys. They backed the young up-and-coming player. They gave him his wings. They took him out. Like, are we getting to near that stage with Casey, do you think? He's impressed so many people in the opportunities he's gotten. Is now the time to back him and give him a bit of ownership, either at Munster in a big game coming up? You know, they could have a Pro 12 final, or they could have a Champions Cup last 16 tie, or against Scotland or England. Am I getting ahead of myself? Because for me, looking at the progression that he's made over the last while and the form Conor Murray's in, better form, but not 2018 form maybe, I think it's not a ridiculous thing to suggest maybe now is the time to give him a bit more game time in a starting role.
He'll certainly need that. He needs that. I still think that Murray's age profile, he gets to the World Cup no problem. So that's everything from my mind is World Cup. So I think it should be on who's playing better for the team. That was a wrong call with Murray at the time. It was a wrong call, particularly at the World Cup. Like, Owen Redden got the biggest shafting of all time there. And Murray, we know, grew into the player. And you know that we always want, that he, like, I mean, that someone saw from miles away. But that was wrong. It was a wrong call for about 2-3 years. It was a big shafting on Redden, who was playing brilliant stuff for Leinster. So, and I think maybe the team suffered a little bit at that point, even though Murray's like an unbelievable player. Like, he went to a period where he was probably the second best scrum half of the world for a very long period of time, behind Aaron Smith for me. So yeah, like, that decision may have helped out at that time, but it was a real shafting at the time for people who are more established and in a better position and playing better. So don't know if I thought that was a crazy call at the time. Not so much for Munster, by the way. Sorry, but for Ireland it was. For Munster, yeah, like that. Craig Casey does need time there, but I still think, you know, they're at a point where they need to win a trophy. Like, I just don't think that they're going to pick the best guy, and they should do that. Because,
well, so my point being is that I think he could well be the best guy at this point.
Best guy, you pick him. If he's the best guy, you pick him. Simp, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah, I'm not saying elevate him for just the sake of elevating. He is on form, I think, worthy of a starting spot.
That was just a last parting shot from Kidney at Redden. There was never, whatever way Kidney, Redden never sat well with Kidney. I don't know why. We never understood it. It was absolutely bizarre. And no one got that one. But leaving that aside, for Munster, the best player needs to play. They need to win a trophy this year or next year. Otherwise that project is under serious pressure. So they pick the best guy. If he's playing better, he should play. I think he's shown that he's up to the level. He's definitely the future there, you know, 4 or 5 years' time. The question is who's playing better. I think what he will do is he's a different type of scrum half, so he's going to get time in there, and that's always going to be the argument. Like, he won't be going anywhere because he'll get 30 minutes, 40 minutes. He'll get a game where Murray's injured. He's always going to get that because he looks like he's well able for the level, and he gives you something different if you need to change up the pace of the game. So I wouldn't be so worried. I don't think he's going to go anywhere, but he'll need game time, and I think he'll get that at Munster. Best player should play.
Yeah, Keane, because I suppose, as Luke said, the change of pace thing is talked about a good bit, like, oh, bring on the injection of pace. But why can't we start with the injection of pace and then bring on Conor Murray to kind of, you know, to win the, you know, kind of see the game out with a slower pace? Like, what do you think? Like, do you think Craig Casey's performing to a level that it would be justifiable to start him for Munster in a big game, for Ireland in a big game, over Conor Murray and Gibson Park in an Irish context?
Yeah, like I think I'd start by saying I thought Gibson Park played quite well at the weekend. And, you know, you talk about upping the pace, like Gibson Park pretty much did that against Italy from the start. On Casey, I would probably not go back on what I said earlier in that are we jumping to conclusions based off, you know, what he did off the bench against a poor Italy team who were really tiring at that stage. Now, to go back to the Munster point, I think your argument definitely stands up for him to start in a big Munster game. He hasn't obviously done that yet, so I'm not sure if we can go off whatever it was, 20 minutes off the bench against Italy. But there's absolutely no doubt about this guy's quality. Like back when I was covering the Munster schools cups, junior and senior cup, I remember covering Craig Casey when he was playing junior cup with Ard Scudrish. And like, that's obviously a good few years ago now at this stage, but like even back then you could see that like this kid like was really, really good. You know, it's his vocal approach as well, which won't really come across on TV, but particularly having been at games behind closed doors over the last while, like when Craig Casey is warming up behind the post, you can hear him like, you know, roaring and shouting. And I think that's one of the reasons why Johnny Sexton came out and, you know, compared him to Johnny Wilkinson, because he's gone into the Ireland camp and he hasn't been overawed at all by it. You know, he hasn't retreated into a shell. By all accounts, he's still that kind of, you know, chatty guy around the place. And I think Luke would be able to expand on this better, I'd imagine. But I think senior players respect that when a guy comes in, you know, and there's obviously a fine line between being arrogant and like self-assured. And Casey is like ultra self-assured, you know, obviously comes from good stock, Mossy Lawler's nephew, his dad, Ger, like heavily involved in Shannon rugby. But like, yeah, like he is the future, but I would be very much of the opinion that the future like doesn't have to be in 4 or 5 years, five years time either. Like, I mean, Conor Murray has a hamstring injury. We don't know. Like, I wouldn't necessarily agree with your point, Will, that just because Casey has been released this week that he won't be involved against Scotland, because he was released last week to play in the Cardiff game, or the game before the Cardiff game. And he ended up getting on the bench, which I would have thought that, you know, the squad that was kept together was going to make up the bulk, but you had the likes of Jack Conan, Ryan Baird, Craig Casey, who all forced their way in. So I wouldn't see it as a foregone conclusion. If Casey starts this week against Connacht and goes well, like, I mean, I'd say there's an argument for keeping him on the bench at least for that Scotland game. And you know, like just on the Munster point, and Luke mentioned it, like with Joey Carberry coming back, if you think like of Munster having like Orji Snyman is on the way back as well, you'd have Snyman and you could have Craig Casey, Joey Carberry and Damian D'Alende, and then obviously the rest of the Irish backs, like that totally changes the complexion of what Munster are able to do in terms of pace. And we've seen more evidence that that's what they're looking to do. And that's apparently what Ireland are looking to do under Mike Catt as well. And if you want to play with tempo, then Craig Casey, like that's his game. It's been a bit frustrating a couple of games this season that, you know, particularly early on in the season, there was one or two games where he was just box kicking a lot. And to me, it looked like that was the game plan that was being asked of him. There's no point in playing Craig Casey if you want him to be Conor Murray and be like an expert box kicker. That is not his game. If you're going to play him, you've got to play to his strength. So I really like the idea of him staying in the squad for the Scotland game, to be honest, because that's what I meant about my point about like taking into account that Italy were poor. If guys are taking their chance when they're getting in at test level, you want to see a reward for that, particularly under the previous regime under Joe Schmidt. That didn't happen an awful lot, that guys weren't rewarded for form. So, and to be fair, I think Farrell has, like, by and large, pretty much done that. So it would be great to see him getting another chance for sure.
No, yeah, I take your point that, you know, maybe it's not a foregone conclusion. I was just reading between the lines, possibly wrong. Yeah, you mentioned it earlier, Keane. I'll put this to you, Luke. Obviously, Johnny Sexton, the news today, confirmed finally, or was it yesterday? I can't remember. They all blend together now. He signed a 1-year contract extension, central contract. What do you make of it?
Yeah, I thought it was great news. I mean, like, he's still playing great. He's still our best player at 10, which is, I think, you know, close to 9 as being the, you know, both of them are very, very important positions on the pitch. So he's still a difference maker. He's a great character, good around the squad. Yeah, I thought it was fantastic news. I was delighted to see him to see him stay on. Interesting to see what happens the year after, probably, but are probably more interesting to see what happens with the next one. But yeah, look, I think he's well able. I'm sure, like, he's at that stage now where the RFU would just start giving him the 1 years. Provided he wants to stay or doesn't want to move his family. So yeah, I thought it was good news. I thought it was good news all around. I think it makes sense for the RFU to keep him on for another year. You know, I think it makes sense for him to be here because I think, you know, obviously I think he'll make it to the World Cup, no doubt. Yeah, it's just a matter of, you know, who's playing the best at the time. I presume he still thinks that's going to be him. And to date, there's been no evidence to no evidence against that belief that he has in himself. So I was delighted to see it. Yeah, it's great.
Yeah, Keane, you know, you wrote a piece about it, and I think you broadly similar to what Luke made there, I think.
Yeah, like, I mean, I can understand the calls for, you know, starting the process, and I do think that it was potentially a missed opportunity to give a younger guy a chance against that poor Italian team. But if you look at it from Farrell's point of view, he needed a win, he needed a performance. Of course he did.
Jeez, loving that win. Did you look how badly he needed it? He was going on about it enough afterwards.
Exactly. But I mean, you can understand it from his point of view. If Ireland were in a, you know, if they'd won their first couple of games or at least one of them, there might have been a bit more scope to give someone else a try. Look, like, I agree with Luke. Like, he's still Ireland's best 10. I mean, he was never really likely to get more than a 2-year deal up to the World Cup. That wouldn't make financial sense or sense from his point of view, given his record. I mean, I think it makes sense to give him another year and review the situation next year. Like, if Johnny Sexton is Ireland's starting out half at the World Cup, like, that would be a major, major concern, I think, because, like, what would he be, 38 by then? Like, you really want to see someone else being, I think, the 10 at that stage. But I would agree, like, there's no point in showing him towards the exit door when someone else isn't in place and ready to go. And who knows, his role could change over the next, like, you know, by the time the World Cup comes around. Like you mentioned, Will, about Conor Murray coming off the bench. It could be Johnny Sexton coming off the bench. I think the big issue, like, if we're going to call a spade, is Ireland are waiting for Joey Carberry to get back fit. They're waiting for Harry Byrne to come through. It's abundantly clear now that neither Ross Byrne or Billy Burns are going to be Ireland's next long-term out half. That might sound a bit harsh, but I just don't believe that either of those guys are going to be it. So it makes sense to, you know, give Carberry that time to come through. And I think all things being equal, you know, Carberry will hopefully be Ireland starting out half come the World Cup. Obviously, he's got a bit of a journey to go on himself now. But, you know, we saw Sexton, how he kind of reacted to Carberry, you know, a couple of years ago down in Thomond Park over Christmas. And that probably got the best out of Sexton too. So, like, I agree with Luke as well in terms of, like, he's never been about pace, Johnny Sexton. So, like, that's not a big concern in given his age now. But you look at his sharp, his speed of passing, his speed of thought, like, that's all still blatantly obvious. And it's so important. He kicked 8 out of 8 as well. Like, I mean, just like it was an added sort of bonus to the performance. But, and I agree, like, that you were saying, like, Jack Harty or Ross Byrne might have enjoyed, like, you know, a game in the Stadio Olimpico in the sun as well. But I still feel like Sexton gives you more than any of the two current out halves in the squad. So from the IRFU's point of view, why would they cut him loose? I guess now it doesn't make any sense. I know people will probably disagree with that, particularly in the financial sort of climate at the moment, but who knows if there's been a hit to the salary. You know, most people are taking a hit to the salary in Irish rugby at the moment. But I think it's good. I think it's not to dismiss that Ireland needs to future plan, like what's coming down the line. But for now, I think it made sense to keep Sexton on.
Oh yeah, I agree. It'll be interesting to see, obviously, if Joey Carberry stays fit and if there's maybe even a summer tour, what options they look to go to there. Maybe to move on to the other games. Obviously, Wales, England was the big one, Luke, over the weekend. Wales, 3-3, Triple Crown winners. I think they were 12-1 or something to win the Triple Crown at the start of the Six Nations. So not many people gave them much of a chance. Benefited, obviously, like they did the first 2 weeks, from massive stroke of fortune with two very, very dubious refereeing decisions. But, like, do you look at Wales and think they're just the beneficiaries of these kind of red cards and calls? Or do you look at them and say, bit of that, but also they went out and they took it and they've shown something? Like, in terms of the rugby side of it, away from the strokes of luck, what are you looking at?
Yeah, like, they scored 40 points. Like, I know one of them was kind of, could you say fortuitous, but it was probably down to pressure as well. No, they've been good. They've hung tight in there. They've won a few games they shouldn't have won. I think Ireland looked like... We just don't know enough about the Ireland one, if I'm being honest. I think Scotland should have beaten them. But they were better than England. They're growing in confidence. I thought some of the attacking rugby was really, really good. They were very physical. They matched England, I thought, very well. And they were alive for the opportunities, even though, like, clearly they were refereeing errors. And if you're alive for them, you know, that's well played. That's good play to my mind. Like, you can only play, you know, the game that's in front of you. They were in the moments and they took advantage of them. Obviously, you know, very poor from the referee, but yeah, I thought they were good, Will. Like, they look fit. They look like they're up for the fight. They look like they've got a bit of momentum behind them. They're playing with a little bit of confidence. It always makes them dangerous. And they still have a few very, very high quality players. I would say Alan Wynne-Jones. People talking about Itoje being the Lions captain. Now, I know I rubbished that. Well, my view on it was that I rubbished that as something to even consider for the Lions. But Alan Wynne-Jones has been playing unbelievable rugby every week. Like, he is still, I think he's still the best second row in the competition. I thought he was brilliant against Ireland as well. He was outstanding, with obviously, you know, notable mentions to James Ryan and Itoje, who were both brilliant players. Now, Itoje had a game to forget on the weekend in terms of his discipline, but Wales look good. They look like they're going to be hard to beat. I'm interested to see if they can finish things out now. They've had a few bounces of the ball, but there'll be one against them as well. That's just, you can't keep getting the rub of the green on this. So can they fight their way through that? Do they have the belief to go on and do that? All signs point to yes at the moment, actually. But would I have said that having watched the Irish game? I certainly would have. And I'm surprised they're in this position. What has been surprising, and we probably should discuss it, is probably England and how poor they've been. They weren't playing well in the autumn. We had mentioned that. It was why I thought maybe they might struggle to beat us in the last game. I still thought Ireland and England would be the two at the top of the table at the end of the competition. I thought we might edge them out. I based that on poor performances, but I thought that they'd be able to lift it for Six Nations. They've been really poor. They look really flat at the moment. I don't know whether it's something to do with the Saracens contingent. I can't put my finger on it. I'm sure Eddie Jones is the same. I thought their discipline was atrocious at times. Really didn't help themselves. And their defense for them was poor. Like, it doesn't have that suffocating feel to it. I don't know why that is. I still think it's a big error to play George Ford at 10, even though he's a lovely player. Farrell is not a 12, and he didn't really show on the weekend, but he's a brilliant 10. I know they said their attack wasn't as fluid, but they're really missing Tuilagi. When they're missing Tuilagi, you're guaranteed go for it, even though I would have Slade in the team every time. I love Slade as a player, but I certainly do not think Farrell is the answer at 12 for them. I just don't. I think it's a mistake for them to do that. And I think that's showing a little bit for them. And I think the pack is playing is not, the defense from the pack is not where it was before.
Just on England, like you look through the team and you're thinking, like, so they've lost from the World Cup, they've lost like a George Cruz, Johnny Hill's come in, hasn't played well, has given away some very stupid penalties. Sam Underhill is injured, Mark Wilson, good dogged player, but nowhere near the player Underhill is. Billy Vunipola hasn't played any rugby, he's not fit. You have Sam Simmons, European Player of the Year, not even in the squad. Crazy. Tearing up trees for Exeter. Even Alex Dombrand for Harlequins, playing very well, another in-form number 8. Then you go to the back line, obviously Tuilagi is a huge loss. Out half, Farrell's not in great form. You have someone like Joe Simmons, double winning out half for Exeter, has never even got a cap, not even the squad either. You know, Ollie Lawrence, the way he was treated, got 2 touches of the ball against Scotland, discarded out of the match day squad against Italy when he could have built some confidence. It's just, yeah, it's just a bit like Jones is kind of prone to, you know, bouts of odd man management and odd selection. It's kind of been a hallmark of his entire career, even when he's had great success. And like Keane, I don't know what you make of it looking in. Like, I just feel like he's gone with his loyal guys that have delivered for them, and they're not firing. Billy Vunipola admitted himself that he's been playing poorly. Now, having said that, they were shafted by the officials at the weekend. I think they would have won that game if those calls were made correctly.
Do you think they win the game? Sorry, Keane, to interrupt.
Well, like by the end, Wales were absolutely killing them. But like the halftime talk, like that's 14 points in the first half. Like England probably go in 10 clear. Like no,
yeah.
No. That was my read on it. Like I thought Wales were in the game from those two mistakes. I thought,
but not
in the first
10 clear. Like they had a penalty in front of the post for one of them, so they're not. That's one of them that's not a definite. Certainly,
like you're taking away.
So say it's 3, sorry. Yeah.
10 points, 11 points from their total, like, you know, in the first half. It's hard to project what would have happened, but certainly, you know, the two calls in the first half.
It's worth talking about them, I think. I mean, they were shocking, like absolutely shocking. This has been an issue, I think, for a while. The standard of refereeing at the moment is not good. And it is interesting to hear Luke mention there Adam and Jones for the Lions captain, which is slightly getting off a different point for me here. But like, it was very noticeable to me watching the Ireland game how the ref Matthew Reynal had absolutely no time for Johnny Sexton. And the dealings between them, like, and I don't think it was Sexton's fault at all. I actually thought he handled himself fine, but there's obviously previous there between them, you can only imagine. But it was just very curt. It just wasn't the way you normally hear the captain speaking. And then you had a similar sort of thing in the England game with Gauzer and Owen Farrell. And it was kind of, you know, I think that's an issue at the moment with the way, like, referees and kind of captains
are. Directive, Keane. Sorry, just to cut. Do you think that's a directive? Because it's interesting.
I don't know.
Just to come in on that question, like, I know there was a PowerPoint presentation circulated to referees, and Brendan Fanning wrote a piece about it, and there was a line in it like, don't explain your decisions, like, you know, you make the decisions, like, don't get in a dialogue, you're not there to, like, you know, barter with the players over potential decisions. I'm obviously adding in this kind of subtext, but like, it was like, no, don't kind of explain, don't get in a back and forth, like, it was kind of just make the decision and move on.
I think that's a very dodgy road to go down personally. Like,
certainly with the captain. The captain should be entitled, like Owen Farrell there. Now, he was kind of running over and getting really animated, but like the captain has to be able to query things and to have a dialogue. That's one of the good things about the sport and the way it's officiated, I would have thought.
I would reckon if you put any captain in there, like an Alwyn Jones or Rory Best, I'm just thinking of two guys who were like really calm. And I think anyone would have lost their cool with how that try was allowed when Farrell was told to go back and to talk to his team. Like, that's crazy. And I think it's a really dodgy line to go down if you're not explaining your decisions. That, like, rugby is so complex, like, that the captain should be able to relate to the team so that they don't make the same mistakes again. And I think, you know, we saw such a similarities between the way the two French refs dealt with Sexton and Farrell. And that is an issue. And I think, you know, that's going to be an issue that'll have to be taken into consideration, whoever you're talking about as the Lions captain. And Alwyn Jones is such a steady hand in that, and his dealings with the refs are good. So it could actually come down to something like that. But the standard of refereeing has been pretty poor. The England-Italy game a few weeks ago was like, it was incredibly bad. I think it was Mike Adamson was the ref. It was...
But what jumps out to me in that case, and the one at the weekend for the re-Samet knock-on, is it's not as if like one ref is missing something in real time. They're gathering together three people on the pitch and someone in a boot, and they're watching these incidents through. I'm thinking of the tackle on Byron Farrell on the Italian scrum half and the knock-on that they miss, and they're talking it all through, and someone's offering up a wrong decision, and they're all just like, yeah, it's like nodding away. It's like, but we're all watching the same thing, aren't we? Like, I don't see how they're, you know, there's a meeting of the minds, four people, and not one person's like, hold on a second, like, there seems to be a reluctance to upset the apple cart in those situations. Like, one person comes in with one opinion, and it's kind of like, okay, we have to go with that now. We can't really be like, you're completely wrong there, mate.
I guess that's the issue that football has at the moment with VAR, in that they don't want people to hear the conversations that are going on between the TMO and the ref, because they're obviously explaining it. But like, something that I was thinking about lately is like, is it just me, or is like lots of refs seem to be TMOs now? And like, was that always the case, or like, was a TMO not a sort of specific role? Like, they might have been like ex-refs or whatever. Like, because I think the ref or the TMO at the weekend was Alex Ruiz, wasn't it, for the Wales-England game. And I'm just thinking, like, are TMOs, had they always been refs, or were they not a sort of a separate kind of role?
I think, from what I remember, I think they oftentimes they're refs who might be losing the legs sometimes, like an older ref. And actually, it seems like it would be a sensible way to go about that. Because, you know, calmer head, more experience, you'd like to think, you know, very, you know, while they can't do the distance, they might have a better appreciation for the game and the rules the older they get.
I agree with that point, but then I'm like, that was a clear knock on by Rhys Samet. Like, why do we need an older ref to be like, you know?
That to my mind wasn't... I'm not sure. I don't know if that's as clear cut as you say. I looked at that a few times. I didn't think that was the worst decision. I thought the way. No, I didn't. I didn't honestly believe that was
spoken like a winger there.
I wasn't sure. Sorry, that one didn't upset me. The one that upset me was the conversation and the dismissal of Owen Farrell. You know, after the try, particularly when he had told him to go back, talk to his team. And again, against the rules, there was water boys on the pitch. Like, you can't have that. Like, you can't have that. Like, that's actually, so when he pointed even that out, like, it was just dismissed completely out of hand. Like, it was like, you know, that's it, decision done. Like, that's not right. Like, you have to, now I will say, you still should be able to approach the referee quite calmly, but you could see why he was animated. He was like, I need to get this information into him quickly because he looks like he's given this try. Like,
he was the one who told him to go back and to talk to his teammates. Like, do you know what I mean? Yeah. Like, it wasn't like Farrell said, oh, I'll talk to the team here. We'll just have a little break. Like, that's why
I enjoyed it the most.
No, but leave it aside. You know, we're talking about like being calm with the referees. Like, at that point, he's kind of given the try. You'd be like, it's very, very hard to not say, whoa, hang on, don't just give that and let him kick it. Like, let's talk about this. So I could see why he was kind of a little bit going, you told me to do this, you know, he was quite animated with him. But like, obviously at that point you're panicking. You're like, don't give the feckin' try. Hang on, we need to talk about this.
100%. That's what I mean about like the Alwyn Jones and Rory Best, like two like really calm guys. Anyone would have lost their head there. But like the TMO has to be, I don't know if brave is the right word, because that's like their job description, but they have to be able to step in when they feel like, you know, this is not the right decision. Because I go back to that Italy-England game, there were so many poor calls in that game, mostly against Italy. But like the TMO has to be strong enough to go, no, like that's not. And it doesn't, like, take your point, Will, that doesn't have to be an older, more experienced like ex-ref. You just have to be strong and go, call it as it is and not as second guessing yourselves, which I feel like there's a lot of going on at the moment.
Yeah, no, we could talk about this all night and go over some of the various decisions. Just before we finish up, guys, last thing I want to cover, it was touched on there, Mara with OJ, Luke, you know, such a good player, but in the Scotland game and then again at the weekend, it's just a penalty machine, like, and so many, like, you're lucky to not even get a card, so he's kind of taking after someone like Richie McCaw in that regard, but it's a funny one because you hear, like, it, you know, all playing on the edge, that's part of his game. But to my mind, there's a difference between playing on the edge and then just giving away, like, stupid penalties. Like, there's definitely a happy medium between being that kind of player where you skirt the laws and then just being a penalty machine and killing your team.
He's one of those players that you hear lots of people saying, his teammates be like, oh, you know, he's one of those players that if he's playing with you, you love him. If you're playing against him, you hate him. Like, I actually just look at that thing and I've been looking at him for a couple of years, particularly in the Leinster matches, and I'm thinking, he's offside all day. He's doing crazy things like that he's been getting away with for a long time. Now, whether that's because he's viewed as a brilliant player or not, I don't know. But I think this is kind of like, to my mind, this is comeuppance for all that stuff. Like, eventually it's come up, like, eventually someone's actually refereeing him. That would be my view on this. I think he's been getting away with it for ages. He doesn't need to do this. He doesn't need to be that on the edge. He's a brilliant player. He can make massive impacts without playing on the edge. Sometimes, and I think James Ryan is very good at this. I think Alan Wynne-Jones is very good at this also. Sometimes it's just getting you don't have to get the massive win every time. What I'm looking at is for players getting a small win all the time that don't give away penalties. Like that, to my mind, that's a neat and tidy player, but also has a massive impact over the course of the whole game. And of course, opportunities will present themselves where you can make a big play, but you have to pick and choose them well. And that was always, in my opinion, was what made McCaw great and what made him actually someone who you're kind of saying, well, yes, of course, he does play on the edge, but he actually is more often than not, you know, he gets small wins. He's not always looking for the massive one. When the massive play comes, he can execute. And he's usually, you know, look, those can be borderline plays, but generally he got those right too. I just think Toje maybe, you know, is looking for the big win all the time, the big play. That's not what sports is about at the top level. It's about getting small edges. Watch Alan Wynne-Jones next time you see him. He drives you half a meter back further. He, you know, everything is just a half a yard slower, but he doesn't, you know, he doesn't get himself in bad positions or he doesn't give away the penalty. He's a great player to me and has had longevity because of that. So I thought it's kind of been coming for a while and he does need to have a look at his game, even though in the public arena, Eddie Jones did defend him. Because let's face it, he's a superb athlete. He's a brilliant player. But he, like, look, it's a nice little wake-up call for him, I think, because he's been really poor discipline-wise. And he's letting his team down because they need a big lift in there at the moment. They need someone to carry them through because the Saris guys, they just don't look themselves yet. And they're key players for them. So you'd have to think that's how you'd hope that from an England perspective that that's a temporary. But in the meantime, he needs to be the lift.
Yeah. Oh, I'm sure he'll be unbelievable against Ireland, as always. He always just says his best for that.
Keane, so referees him.
Yeah. Keane, I'll give you the last word before we wrap up on a Toje.
Yeah, like just what Luke said there, not when referees ref him. I think it'd be very interesting to see how it's become a big topic of discussion this week. I wonder, like, are refs going to be even more focused on him now going forward? And I agree, like, he does play the game on the edge, but it is a fine balance because if you take him too far away from that edge, I mean, he's still a great player, but it is part of what makes him the player he is. But like, you can't have, like, what was it, 5 or 6 penalties he conceded. I don't know how he didn't end up getting a yellow card. Like, what player like concedes that many penalties and doesn't get a yellow card? But yeah, like, you'd wonder how much of it is down to, like, I know he's played what, a couple of games now, but like, lack of match sharpness, because we've talked so much about the step from Pro 14 to Champions Cup and Champions Cup up to test level. Like, the Saris players haven't played rugby at all. And while they're great players, like, to my mind, both of the Vunipolas look off the pace. I think Owen Farrell has been nowhere near his best. Toje, obviously, as he talked about. And to me, England kind of remind me of Ireland in 2019. It just looks a bit stale. I think they need a few of the guys that you touched on, Will, your likes of your Dom Brands, the Simmons brothers. Not saying make wholesale sweeping changes, but just one or two guys into that squad or into that team, I think, could really shake it up. And yeah, like it reminds me of Ireland and maybe not being stuck with the same guys who've delivered in the past, and regardless of how well they're playing. So, like you said, you're imagining that the last game of Six Nations, they'll all be absolutely firing, and you know it'll be classic England. But yeah, we'll wait and see.
Yeah, no, it'll be interesting to see if Eddie Jones makes any changes and if the officiating improves and what team Ireland pick for Scotland. But in the meantime, Luke Keane, thanks so much for joining me.
Cheers, Will.
Cheers, lads.
That's all we have time for this week on The Left Wing. Thank you so much for listening. We'll be back next week with another podcast. And in the meantime, you could subscribe to us on iTunes, SoundCloud, or listen on independent.ie. So until next week, thanks for listening and goodbye.